Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 10th on the West Coast, now September 11th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome those who may be listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, whether live or in a rebroadcast of this show archive. We enjoy having you with us in either case, especially because we feel very strongly that we're bringing you the truth that the mainstream media dares not touch. And for the most part, most of the alternative media won't touch it either. 9/11, this is the ninth year now into this event. And there's a very interesting little vignette of the morning of 9/11 at a Florida school where then President George W. Bush was sitting listening or getting ready to listen to some students who were involved in a reading class. Let's presume that this is an elementary school where they spend some time on science, some time on math, maybe a little bit on recess and certainly reading. They were starting their English class and reading from a book. Prior to actually reading the book, they had a little exercise which was derived from a piece of paper that was taped to the wall next to the blackboard. And on the sheet of paper, the kids were practicing reading drawn-out versions of saying pretty much one-syllable words and then saying the short versions. So the words, as I recall them, I don't have the video up. Might be interesting even to play it for you. But the message was kites, or I should say kite, planes, hit, and the word steal, and must. And it's sort of like a little mind game, a little subconscious word puzzle there. The kite might have referred to a remote-controlled flying thing and planes, and then hit steel, like hitting the World Trade Center, and must. And the fact that the verb ended up at the end of the sentence was to confound whoever was reading, but I think the odds of that coming up would probably be maybe 100 billion to one, that sequence of words. And having it mirror in real time the events that were occurring in New York City. And nonetheless, after the class was praised for having read these words, then they opened up the book, My Pet Goat. And the President of the United States held the book upside down. One wonders if he was programmed to do that or if that was just a signal to us, like flying the American flag upside down. I think he was just in a stupor. He looked quite removed from what was going on in the room. In fact, he looked quite removed from the whole planet, if you ask me. He had the dumbest look I think I've ever seen on anyone's face. And certainly he knew he was powerless to do anything, but he certainly didn't act as someone who we would expect to be our leader. The way we expect our leaders to act, he certainly didn't act that way. And many have remarked about that, but it's interesting that that little snippet came out in some emails today, and it is visible at YouTube, if you care to listen to it. I'm going to try to pull it up here, if I can, to try to bring up tonight's guest, maybe just after playing this and get his reaction on this little ditty. I've basically described it, but you have to hear it to really imagine that this occurred. It's quite unusual, to say the least. I'm going to play it if I can get it up here on YouTube. And I think I'm going to be able to do that. So we're going to give it a try. Not responsible for the audio. Now it says, where was Bush on 9/11?
Get ready to read all these words on this page without making a mistake. Look at the letter at the end and remember the sound it makes. Get ready.
Pipe.
Yes, pipe. Get ready to read this word the fast way. Get ready.
Pig.
Yes. Sound it out. Get ready.
Pig.
Sound it out. Get ready.
Pig.
What word?
Pig.
Yes, pig. Boys and girls, sound this word out. Get ready.
Steel.
What word?
Steel.
Yes, steel. Read these words the fast way. Get ready.
Play.
Yes, play. Get ready.
Must.
Yes, must. Let's read these words the fast way without making a mistake. Get ready.
Kite.
Yes, kite. Get ready.
Kick.
Yes, kick. Get ready.
Steal.
Yes, steal. Get ready.
Play.
Yes, playing. Get ready.
Must.
Yes, must. Boys and girls, pick your reader up from under your seat. Open your book up to lesson 60 on page 153. At the count of three, everyone on page 163, if the yellow paper is going to bother you, drop it. Thank you. Everybody touch the title of your story. Fingers under the title. Get ready to read the title, The Fast Way. We're waiting for one member. Thank you. Fingers under the title of the story. Get ready.
The Pet Go.
Very interesting little video. They had a way of reading this book, which was quite strange, too, tapping on the table as they read. So you use your fingers, tap on the table. Some were pounding on the table. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. And yet, that's what went on at 9/11, and the President of the United States was sitting in the midst of this. We may talk about this and some other things about 9/11, this being the anniversary, with tonight's guest. He's our regular Friday night guest on Evident Footprints. He is also our resident science advisor. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you, Don. It's interesting that you even mention that. I've been so absorbed in the work that I've been doing, I never even realized the date. But now that you mention it about 9/11, it's just amazing how fast the years have rolled by. And, I remember so clearly where I was and what I was doing when that incident occurred. And there was just a complete air of incredulity, about the whole thing. It was hard enough to believe that one plane hit one tower, never mind the second one coming along a few minutes, behind it. It was just an amazing day. I remember it very clearly. And it's funny how you don't only remember things like that, but I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when Kennedy was shot, too. I bet you most people do.
Yes. Don't you find it a bit strange that those words were taken? Kite, planes, plural, planes, steel, hit, and must.
What's the last word? I can't quite hear it.
Must. M-U-S-T.
Oh, must. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like somebody was trying to get, a message out. It would be interesting to know who put that word list together.
Oh, of course. Yeah, this is printed out. The camera zoomed in on it. They captured all this. To me, in a sense, it's almost like there's a in one sense there is a spell being cast, and this is repeated twice, not once, twice. I found it very strange to take a word like hit, which is a very short word, and stretch it out, hit, like that, like you're magnifying the sound of that word for some reason. I mean, it's beyond me. I'm not into Satanism, you know, and rituals like that. I certainly can see the symbolism in the five words that were picked. Kite leaves a little bit to be desired, but it's something that's flown by an operator on the ground, you know, as is remote control. So I equate that with remote control. Some people said that clip was shown in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 movie, but that was a Democratic hit piece on the Bush clan, or on the Republicans is what it was. Just to create controversy. Got to blame somebody. Certainly, we knew Dick Cheney was involved in much more on that day. You had three different reports of $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon that came out the day before. And the average mind isn't able to connect those facts. Most people are totally unaware of that. You say $2.3 trillion, they're going to say, where did they get that money? You know.
Well, there's another interesting thing to consider, too. There was a gold repository in the basement of the World Trade Center. And I understand when they finally dug down through the rubble, there was no gold in it. And, you know, I used to work in the maintenance department of the World Trade Center years ago, and I can tell you for an absolute fact that the Hudson Manhattan subway system, which came in underneath the World Trade Center, they had special freight cars and special flat cars that were shorter in length than a standard car, and they were used for bringing in the gigantic air conditioning equipment and various motors and stuff like that, and they had freight elevators of enormous size. And the whole World Trade Center was situated in such a way that, I forget exactly what number, but let's say every 10th floor, or maybe it was every 12th floor, was what they call a machine floor. And on that floor, they had all the air conditioning and pumping equipment for fire and the water, you know, the water relay pumps and the sewage, the intermediate sewage holding tanks and all this kind of stuff. And the whole purpose of telling you this is that it would be very easy to use that same gigantic elevator to move gold down and then put it on these flat cars or these abbreviated box cars and whisk it over to New Jersey. And it could very easily have been offloaded in Newark and taken away by truck or by another train. Nobody would ever know the difference if it was done like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're trying to adjust your sound here, Jim. So if I sound a bit diverted, it's because I'm trying to type a message to Seth. But
am I not coming across properly?
Your audio is kind of warping. It's almost like you're going through a phase shifter. So, strange. That happened last week after we adjusted our sound. I had to really struggle to understand what you were saying. So, I'm trying to avoid that experience 2 weeks in a row. We'll work on it as you're talking. So, you know, don't concern yourself about it too much. I wonder where the asbestos played into all this, you know, because the whole reason for taking these buildings down partially had to do with what it was going to cost to redo them and remove all the dangerous material that was in those buildings. But what a bit of irony that was. Was the asbestos the most dangerous material in those two buildings on 9/11? Based on what we've learned of the explosives that were used and the technologies that brought those buildings down in a free fall. I don't think any of this was an accident, and the terrorists are those that were running the government and the Israeli government. Pure and simple. All the evidence points to them. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I can tell you one thing, and I think I've already mentioned this on a past show, but I was introduced to a guy who called himself the Frenchman, and he had an office in the World Trade Center, and we used to have lunch together once in a while. He was involved with high finances. His father, I think, was involved with the French Mint or the French Treasury at one time. And he was not from this country, but he was working here. And one thing that he told me, among other things, I mean, he was actually the first person to ever tell me that the Federal Reserve system, you know, didn't work the way everybody thought it was, that it did, and that it was not a part of the government, but rather a privately held organization. And one of the things he told me was that he said this, and this was weeks before the World Trade Center actually came down, and he said, there's something in the wind. He said, I'm not sure what it is, but it's not going to be good. And apparently he had heard something somewhere which indicates that somebody already knew about it, but he didn't realize that it was going to be the World Trade Center. I mean, he had an office there. And so unfortunately, after the incident, I never heard from him again. I don't know if he was killed in the calamity or if he heard something else and flew the coop ahead of time. I have no way of knowing. But the mere fact that there were not only him, but other people apparently knew something was up. There were all kinds of people who didn't show up that day. And they had normal work hours. And so, I mean, there was something planned well in advance. If you wanted to really look into it, there's no two ways about it. It was not an accident.
Yeah, well, it was. It was predicted in their Project for a New American Century document, Rebuilding America's Defenses. And there were 27 people that signed on to that we needed a Pearl Harbor to catapult us into a war with Muslim countries. This was all planned. I mean, you know, there's no getting around that. The fact that everybody came out within 90 minutes of the event and they were blaming Osama bin Laden for it, how did they come to that understanding? You know, how did they acquire that knowledge when they were totally incompetent in starting or stopping the event? Well, I said starting because they're the ones responsible for it. They had no intention of stopping it. That's why it didn't get stopped. The conclusions that everyone was making that the jet fuel, aka kerosene, was basically melting steel, and melted 47 columns of the building from the top down. I mean, if it was the heat, if it was the top pancake, a top floor pancaking down onto the next one, onto the 109th floor, well, you have the roof, too. The roof pancaking onto the 110th floor, then the 109th, and et cetera, down to the first floor. It can't be explained that way. It's illogical. There was no fire on the top. There was heat rising, but was it jet fuel? Not if there was no airplane. There wasn't. And it's quite evident that they played with the video, and we saw images that all seemed to black out at the same moment on all the networks. And that means they're all showing the same film. So who supplied them with the film? How is it that they were able to pre-position a camera, and I've mentioned this many a time, at the level of the 85th floor to give us a bird's eye view of this thing going in horizontally? It's just preposterous, the whole thing.
Well, not only that, but, you know, I know people that have done frame-by-frame examinations of the films that were available. Well, when that building was coming down, under magnification, if you look at it, you can literally see beams flying through the air, coming out, you know, in all directions, and they're absolutely uniformly cut.
Yes.
And the only way that can happen is with jet cord or, you know, a space charge or a shape charge, as they call it. And it's well-known technology for detonation of a demolition of a building.
Yes.
And the other thing that's interesting, too, is the dust had hardly settled, and I mean that literally, and they were already trucking the steel away and melting it down or doing whatever they did with it. As a matter of fact, I understand they built a new Navy vessel out of a lot of that steel. But the point is that nobody was allowed to examine it. And the reason I think that was so is because of the fact that when something's cut with dead cord or a shape charge, it leaves an absolutely identifiable signature. And then, of course, you have the mystery of Building 7, which just kind of fell down all by itself hours later. And nobody had the brains to ask the question, well, what happened to that building? There was no airplane involved there.
Yeah, the BBC announced on British time, 4 minutes to the hour, roughly some 20 to 25 minutes before the building fell, they were announcing in England that it had fallen, and their BBC reporter in New York City, who was standing on a balcony of an office building, made the same comment. It's fallen down, and it was behind her. In the video, you can see the building is still standing. So how do these people... How did anyone in England know the building had fallen down when it didn't? In other words, they knew it was going to fall down. So the propaganda,
if timing was a little off or something.
Yeah, the propaganda had already been decided, you see. And you had two people, the anchor on the live London BBC broadcast, and you had the location anchor in New York City, both saying the same story. And they were stupid enough to film this woman with the building to her back. It was crazy. It was still standing. Okay.
Well, I mean, maybe she was a psychic. You know what I mean, Don? She just,
or maybe she was a girlfriend of Osama bin Laden, and maybe he told her he was going to do that.
You know. Well, you know, he hasn't been seen since. Maybe he was one of the pilots.
That's a possibility. We haven't considered that, have we?
No. It's pretty hilarious.
Oh, I know. It's hilarious, and in another sense, it shows the level of insanity and psychopathy in the government, the criminality, organized crime, that is. You want a RICO event? There's the RICO event of the millennium right there on 9/11. They all should have been rounded up at that time. All of them. And now, I heard the story about the was it a frigate that they built? I can't remember what kind of ship, if it was a frigate or a destroyer, but...
It was one of the new class boats. It wasn't something common, you know, like you would have heard about in World War II. It was one of the new class, like maybe one of the Perry class assault vessels. It's mostly got missiles and helicopters and anti-submarine stuff like that. You know, I'm not sure what it was, but it was something unusual.
Yeah. Well, I remember some 3 to 4 months before they announced this story about this ship being built and almost being ready to be launched, that there was a story that all of that steel had been shipped to China. All the steel from the collapsed buildings, that there was a hangar at one of the New York airports where they had dumped all this stuff and picked it up later on. So if we have, and based on the energy weapons that it appears they used, how do you explain, Jim, blocks away, cars getting charred, lined up, parked on the streets, and in front, let's say, sandwiched in between two cars that were just burned to a crisp like bacon, there is a car totally unscathed. What kind of energy device would, let's say, seek out a target or ground itself to some object and not touch another object right in front of it?
It's a real difficult question, Don. I don't know the answer. Because when you stop and think of it, you know, the cars themselves, even if they're different models and different makes and different years, pretty much all made of the same stuff. The only thing that it would almost indicate would be, you know, some kind of a scanning weapon that has a pulsed characteristic to it,
mm-hmm.
so that it, you know, it missed some things and just got the next one, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
What it is and exactly how it works is a different story. But I can tell you something interesting about that, though. Years ago, when I was working with Piasecki Aircraft in Philadelphia, we were working on the Helistat project, which was a pretty amazing undertaking. And essentially, it was a heavy lift vehicle. It was a hybrid between helicopter and dirigible. It was a very exciting project to be involved with. And the actual construction was being done at Lakehurst Naval Air Station. And we were in one of the aft hangars, and it was quite long. I don't remember exactly the dimensions, but it was probably over 200 feet long. And, of course, very high, because you could literally bring a dirigible in there, and it was still floating. It was off the ground and moored internally and work on it. But anyway, we were in there working on this Helistat device. And at one point, the Navy personnel or perhaps another branch of the armed forces, they came in and put up a cyclone fence across the middle of the hangar. And the forward part of that hangar was deemed off limits to our working crews. But every day you saw these guys building something and playing around over there with something. And eventually they had this big black box that they lifted up with a crane, and it had these two gigantic cables coming down off of it. And they had a bunch of high voltage equipment and generators and stuff that they were running at the other end. And at any rate, every once in a while, you'd hear a big explosion. It wasn't exactly an explosion. It was more like a loud crack of some sort. And it was coming from whatever they were doing over there. Well, the interesting thing is that anybody that had an electric watch, the watch stopped completely, and usually they couldn't get it to run again was either magnetized or in other ways, you know, destroyed internally. We had one guy that was drilling holes for rivets, aircraft rivets, and the electric drill wasn't even plugged in. And on one occasion, the drill started turning by itself. It was laying there on the ground, and it wasn't even plugged in. So they were doing something with some type of a system that was pretty damn powerful, and I guessed it was EMP, electromagnetic pulse of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a commissary just across the parade ground in another building, and I ran into a bunch of those guys over there one day. They were having lunch. Well, I just asked them point blank. I said, you know, how powerful is the EMP you guys are developing? And are you using a capacitive discharge method? And, you know, I just dumped a whole bunch of questions on them. And they didn't answer me at all, which, of course, was an answer of a sort.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a really annoyed look on their face. So I just assumed that I guessed correctly. Now, that was back in 1970-something. I don't remember the exact date. Late 70s, possibly early 80s. But it was before I got married, so it was quite a while ago. And if they were playing around with that far back in time, God only knows what, you know, something like that could have been developed into in the next 30 years, especially with, you know, the amount of money that they have to throw at these things. But the fact is, it's well known that there's all kinds of secret black ops projects involving weapons and all kinds of things that would defy the imagination of the average individual. And it's all paid for with funds from some really strange sources.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm thinking about this weapon, and I know I've mentioned this on another show. I don't know if I mentioned it with you, but there was a film that was made across the Hudson River by Richard Siegel called 9/11 Eyewitness. Basically had a tripod just sitting on a camera and had it focused on the World Trade Center. While the buildings are smoking and burning, and there's obviously a lot of chaos going on, and we see very few of these shots in the mainstream media from the vantage point of being somewhere on Manhattan. But across the river, you can see black choppers flying around the building. One flies to the top of the building, almost directly over it, just slightly, let's say, near the edge of the building, near a corner. And I'd have to get my bearings straight as to exactly orientate myself. But imagine you see a chopper flying around at the very top, at the roof level, and he goes up above the roof, and you see a white flash come out of that chopper, and at that moment that flash comes out, he pulls out away from the building and takes off, and the building begins immediately to collapse. To me, that was a particle beam weapon of some sort, maybe pulse modulated. There was definitely a push that occurred at the time that weapon was fired. And I think if it's carrying the right frequencies of energy, that it could, let's say, follow certain pathways along beams in the building. That energy could have literally just amplified itself as it went down. I don't know how far it has to travel, but I would think when it hit the ground, it would be sort of random as to what might be in the energy path, because I think as it goes through that building, depending on the structure of the building, if it's got routes to follow, pathways to follow because of inductance, that that some of those cars got hit and some didn't because of that reason, that the energy was sort of scattered, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about transferring electricity without wires on some past shows, past couple of weeks we've been doing that. So this is another aspect of transferring energy down a pathway. Certainly was intended to cause that building to implode. And you were speaking about the accuracy and the symmetry of the cuts, as if the charges had been laid there for that specific purpose. And it was a timed sequence. It had been timed, probably predetermined how long it would take for those buildings to fall with the amount of explosives that were there. But I would think that particle beam weapon itself may have been able to do that much damage. And the rest of it was just to make sure, it was their little insurance policy. That's what I think happened. There are plenty of phenomena that have been captured in the independent analyses of the videos that were out there. Now, you could question every single video just on the basis that they showed the whole world what looked like it was photoshopped into the feed that the news media was showing us. You know, this is something that people keep forgetting. You know, they want to blame people on this, but they've lied about who's behind it, and the improbability of those people being able to do that is even more insane. Oh, they learned how to fly a plane, but they didn't learn how to land. But they were absolutely skilled in doing something that most fighter pilots say they wouldn't be able to do. To turn with the accuracy at the speed that those planes were allegedly going. Impossible feats. That's really the big red flag about the whole event. The fact that those planes were not on anybody's docket for a year and a half. They were not on any flight schedule. They had all been pulled from the flight schedule. And then the numerology in the the numbers of the planes, with the exception of Flight 93. 93 backwards is 39. 39 can be divided into three times, giving you the number 13. So maybe that's why they use 93. 11 is one of their magical numbers. 77 is 7 times 11. And Flight 175 adds up to another 13. So there was a ritual. There was definitely a satanic ritual that accompanied that event. All the symbology is there, all of it.
Well, and, I don't doubt that for a minute. We've talked on other shows about how similar numerological and astrological aspects have been interwoven into lots of different events, not just 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it seems to be a competing trend that they do this type of thing.
Yes, I've been doing some research on some of the symbols that they use for the corporations, and basically, it's the same stuff over and over and over again. The logos that they use for the food companies, for example, or the energy companies can be categorized within the four elements that make up the groupings of the 12 astrological signs, assigning three signs to each element. You know, you have the earth, you have fire. They use those quite a bit, not exclusively, but those are the primary ones that they use for designing logos. And when you begin to see these symbols, you see this in everything. You be going down the street, down the highway, looking at a sign, and you can see symbols in those as well. Or billboards that have totally dysfunctional messages, but there's all this Illuminati symbolism in it. You know, this is to drive it into our subconscious, to get us to accept it on a childish level, you know, on an immature level. The dumbing down. But I just throw that in because it allows one to go back and look at 9/11, and you can see the symbology. Numerically, the names and the flights of the planes, some of the people they created for these passenger lists. I think those were all bogus, to tell you the truth. It was all made up. And then some were based on real people. But those people haven't died. Some of those people are alive. And we see the same paper trail to corruption in the stock market and put options. So it's, you think anything will ever be done about this on some level, Jim?
Well, you know, it's the same old story. If the public leaves everything up to the government, which is the way things have been handled now for the past, well, certainly since World War II, anyway, the investigations are all going to be slanted in the direction that they want it to be. It's not going to be a non-prejudicial investigation, that's for sure. It's the same thing with the investigation into Kennedy's assassination. You're not going to tell me that was an absolutely unbiased and truthful exploration into the possibilities of Kennedy's assassination. It's ridiculous. I mean, even things as simple as how many bullets can be fired from, I forget the name of that Italian weapon, but I know it was a 6.5 something Carcani bolt-action rifle. And believe it or not, I fired those kind of rifles when I was younger. And the curiosity about those things is that the tip of a bullet, the actual part of the bullet that comes out of the barrel, is so long that it loses orbital stability after just a few yards and begins to spin and tumble. And once that happens, it's very hard for it to accurately hit, you know, a target as far away as Kennedy's car was from the book repository. And if it did hit, you know, from that distance, the thing would literally be like a miniature buzzsaw. It would cut somebody's arm right off. And so I find it highly illogical that the guy they blamed it on, can't think of his name right now.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, Oswald. I have a great deal of trouble believing, first of all, that he could fire that rapidly and, you know, hit the target. And then you've got the issue of the number of bullets fired and all of the damage that was done by supposedly three or four shots. And so they had this magic bullet theory, you know, that the bullet went in one guy's arm and came out, and then it went through somebody else, and then it made a right angle turn and did this and did that. It's just utterly nonsense. You know, there's no way in the world that the laws of physics are going to change just because some idiot bureaucrat wants to basically cover his behind with a fabricated report. I mean, it's been mentioned many, many times on the Zapruder film, and other eyewitness people saw additional gunmen on the grassy knoll, and you know, the fact that in the one film you can see the president's the skin on his head fly off, and it's going in the opposite direction from, you know, from the direction that Oswald is supposedly firing from. It's just a lot of nonsense. I mean, it was a well-organized military-style hit that involved a bunch of professionals that were put in the absolutely right place at the right time to do the job. Oswald was the patsy, and I wouldn't be surprised if, like all operations of that sort, that the guys who actually did the job, even though Oswald was the patsy, those guys were probably eliminated immediately, and they're probably buried in some unmarked grave somewhere. Because that's how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
There's never anything that's straightforward, and you know, people who take part in things like that are promised huge amounts of financial rewards for assisting whoever puts these things together. But you have to be nuts to accept a thing like that, because the real plan is to get rid of the guys who did it also. I mean, everybody wiped out everybody if you stop and think about it. I mean, Oswald was hit, and Ruby died of stomach cancer mysteriously, you know, a few weeks later in his jail cell. I mean, it's just one thing after another, you know. But
yeah,
these people were all connected,
yeah.
And you asked me if anything would ever be done about it, which is what led to all of it. I think if Americans in general keep turning their back to the facts, that nothing will ever be done. But the interesting thing is this. That same attitude of, you know, ignoring the facts and being apathetic about what's going on will eventually lead to the entire nation becoming a fascist police state. And when that happens, everybody will say, gee, how did this happen? And it happened because nobody had the chutzpah to prevent it from happening. You know, you don't have to be a genius to figure out what's going on right now in this country. And we do have the power to stop it before it happens. But it takes nerve. You know, it takes some resolve. And if we don't exercise that type of action, then we shouldn't complain about the concentration camps and the total control over our lives and what happens to the money and all this other stuff. So just keep your mouth shut and be good little quiet slaves and let these guys play their games. But if you don't want that to happen, then you better do something to interrupt it. Because you notice one thing, and you have to give them credit for it. They never waver, they never stop, and they never back up. They keep right on working their plan. And they know that we don't do the same thing on the other side. So sooner or later, they figure they're going to get to where they want to go. And they probably will.
Yeah. Well, we've been, since January this year, Jim, you and I and many of our other guests on the show, have been revealing some very deep truths in a lot of areas. I think from the beginning, I came to the conclusion that if you are going to undo this, you have to know who's doing it. You have to know who's behind it. You have to know who the minions are, and you have to know who's pulling their strings. Okay? Some of us journalists and talk show hosts have come under fire of some vicious attacks designed to slander, defame, and libel us as somehow this is to be equated with committing murder of people on other parts of the planet. I mean, it's ridiculous. Or to say that we're employed by the intelligence agencies. I don't want that distinction, you know, because they don't know how to spell. They don't know how to write. They're all mind-controlled. They're all chipped. Many of them are pedophiles and Satanists. I want nothing to do with them. Okay? I've not been paid a penny for this show, and I can guarantee you the intelligence agencies haven't paid me a penny, but they listen to this show. Believe me, they got many agents, thousands of them listening to this show and other shows like this. And so you expose them for who you are, who they are. You expose them for what they're doing and who they are, and then you let the chips fall where they may, because we're not all stupid. We're not all dumbed down. And some of the ridiculous claims being made by people who are being lauded as saviors of mankind are ridiculous. And I'm doing some research. I'm doing some really interesting research where you're going to see some people that you thought were people do some serious shape-shifting. Serious stuff. And they're doing it on their own productions. There's no foul play on my end. I'm just analyzing what they put out. And I've told listeners that they can do the same things themselves. They can download videos. They can freeze frame the videos and go a frame at a time, advance forward, and they'll see some of the most unbelievable things happen right before their eyes. And these aren't artifacts and digital distortions and things like that. These beings can be seen by the camera, because the camera can shoot 30 frames a second, or in some cases 24 frames a second. It all depends on the equipment you're using, but technologically, the human mind can see that and perceive that through the eyes. The eyes they're fantastic lenses, and they can see many things that a camera can't see. But the camera affords us the ability to stop these things in time and examine them segment by segment. And so when you take a video and you advance it a frame at a time, you can see these beings shape-shifting. Okay? So let's get to who they are and what's going on, because this goes back thousands and thousands of years. This kind of chaos has been on this planet in the state that it is right now for at least 13,000 years. But these games have been played over and over and over again for millennia. You can say darn close to 500,000 years this has been going on. And this is a phenomenon that's going on in other parts of the universe, too. It's been dealt with, and it's being dealt with in those places, and it's about to be dealt with here. And I know to some extent...
Well, I certainly hope so.
Yeah, I know to some extent that rings very true to you.
Oh, yeah, I have feelings about it, but you know what happens, and I mean... Regardless of how open-minded you are and how accepting you want to be of a positive outcome, when you can't detect anything happening but additional evil, it's difficult to assume, you know, a positive outcome, even if you really and truly want one. And, you know, that's an understandable phenomenon, because you can see these guys actually making progress in the things that they want to do if you're smart enough to follow it. But very few of the good guys ever seem to score points, and that gets to me after a while.
Well, but you've identified the crux of the problem, too, because you have a lot of people just sitting around waiting for somebody to take the first step, or for somebody to take the leadership role, the responsibility of addressing it or providing the solution. And then once they provide the solution, they want to see them carry it out. They want to watch it. They want to make their life be just like a movie. They want it to have a happy ending, but they don't want to buy the ticket. They don't want to sit in the theater and watch it. They want to critique it. You know, what good is a concert critic that doesn't understand the music, knows nothing about the composer or about the musical group that he's about to critique? What gives him the ability to critique? You know, I don't think I've ever read a concert review that made a whole lot of sense and show and convinced me that the person listening to the music knew what the heck they were talking about. And it's kind of the same thing when you're watching world events. They put the story out, they put the propaganda out, everybody bites that bait. And then they're chewing on it, trying to swallow it. When they figure it doesn't go down, just spit it out. But then they grab the next bait that comes along, forgetting the experience of the first time they took the bait. That's a repeated process that goes on. And when you study that, when you recognize that, you see it happening over and over again. It's the same pattern. If you know what good is, and you know what right is, and you know what evil is, certainly you can make a distinction between good and evil, and what the two do when they're operating properly. Good is creative, and evil is destructive. But these people like to, well, I use the word people with hesitation, too. That was a slip of the tongue. Michael Tsarian calls them beings, doesn't call them humans or mankind or human beings. He just calls them beings. And he says they're psychopathic. He's not the only one that says that. Christopher Holmes has said that on this show. I think you were on the show with him once, were you not?
Yeah, that was quite a while ago, though.
Yeah.
But I do remember, yeah.
Yeah, he sees it from the perspective of somebody that works with troubled people. He says these people are worse off than the ones they have in jail that he treats, that he counsels. He said it'd be better to turn them out into society, release them from jail, and put all these guys in where they belong. These are the real murderers, the real drug dealers, the real pedophiles.
Yeah. I would love to see something done about it, you know, but it's like the same story over and over again when you stop and think of it. When you come right down to the bottom line, which is going to require somebody's arrest, somebody being put in jail, perhaps some executions, whatever. You run into a very interesting path of resistance, in my opinion, and that is, well, who in our governmental structure actually has the authority to arrest some of these people that really need to be arrested and jailed? And then when you answer that question, and by the way, I think I know the answer to the question, but anyway, when you answer the question, then the next thing that should come rolling off your lips is, okay, what's wrong with the guy? Why isn't he stepping in and exercising his rights or his authority and, you know, get some of these birds off the street? But it doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have been bribed, right?
Oh, I know. That's part of the problem. But the interesting thing is that, you know, you want to remember that most of the time, people who are on the take and who are supportive of you as long as the money flows will turn on you in an instant if there's any kind of a breach in the expected payoffs. And the interesting thing is I've heard a few stories that maybe that particular aspect of this situation is actually being played for all it's worth. But there again, I'm not in a position to verify that one way or the other. All you can do is hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had our share of stories, and they changed. They keep changing. The culprit behind 9/11 changed. I go back to this film that they showed the night of 9/11. They showed an explosion allegedly filmed and went off. This is what gets me, is there's an explosion and somebody just happened to have a camera running in the middle of the night in Afghanistan and took a picture of a bomb exploding. Just happened to catch that on video. And you know, the average person, oh, they say, oh, look at that. Yeah, there was an explosion in Afghanistan. Nobody stops to think of who might have done it. But in that same broadcast, Tom Brokaw said the CIA and the FBI denied having anything to do with it. No one said they did. Did they?
I know. It's self-incriminating.
Yes, absolutely. And on the night of 9/11, that is so off the wall, that little vignette that they did wasn't very long, 15 seconds. But that they had to mention that. And then where did we end up going to war? Where are we still fighting? Oh, well, they say we're fighting a war. Okay. You invade somebody's land, yeah, you're going to start a war, and then you're going to tell your people back home that, yeah, it's bad, you know, the Taliban are bad. The Taliban just about got rid of the poppy fields in Afghanistan, and they wouldn't stand for that. They had to go in there, the pharmaceutical companies and the intelligence agencies and the boys in the Pentagon make too much money smuggling drugs worldwide. It's big business. It's the business, really, in terms of profit to investment. And many of the soldiers that we know that were stationed in Afghanistan, the ones that made it back, said all they're doing is guarding drugs. They're going around killing people, yeah. But here you have a false enemy created on propaganda. And eventually you kill enough people in anybody's country and people are going to rise up against you, especially if you have no business being in that country. But that we can just go to a country and start a war and just let this go on, I mean, it's absolute insanity. And the people, yeah, you got to clap for these guys. How are they protecting this country by being over in another country murdering those people? Where is the logic behind that? I have a hard time. I have great respect for the work that soldiers do when the cause is just, but not contrived. They still haven't found the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and it's still total chaos there. You know, they picked up alleged terrorists and took them to Guantanamo and tortured them there. For years, never, ever allowing them to eat a decent meal or sleep. Well, just because they called them terrorists. The terrorists are in Washington and New York and Israel and Frankfurt and Paris and Moscow and Beijing. Those are the real terrorists. The corrupt, organized criminal governments that are doing shaking everybody and everything down, just like they do in the mob movies. I don't mean to go on a rant, Jim, but that's the reality of what's really going on. That's what people have to wake up to.
Well, that's part of the mystery, too, really. I think that people must be incredibly disconnected from their everyday world, at least insofar as the avenues of politics are concerned, because you don't really have to be a Rhodes Scholar or a constitutional lawyer to see how things are being arranged with long-distance plans which do not include our best interests. You just don't have to be that smart. I mean, now they've started to publish the so-called health care bill. I don't know if they're leaving stuff out of it or not, but it would be very interesting if people actually started to read it. I mean, I haven't had the time to do it, and I'm not going to lie about it, but I do know people who have, and according to them, there's everything in there but the kitchen sink. I mean, it has basically been used as a carry-all mechanism for just taking away so many additional liberties that it's almost mind-blowing. And it's already being marketed as a futures endeavor. They're actually trying to treat it as a futures commodity.
It's a Ponzi scheme, isn't it?
Well, of course it is. I mean, they're actually trying to make money on it before it's even accessible to the general public for whom it's supposed to be designed, with their best interest in mind, of course.
Yeah, the answer to most people is money. You know, I lost a loved one. Give me money. That undoes it. You know, even if that loved one isn't really lost, that's the story they have to have out there. And just give people more illusion, because the money is an illusion. So give them some more illusion. That's what they want. That's what will shut them up. Now, don't tell anybody how much money we gave you here, you know. Your mother or your father or your brother or your sister or your uncle or your grandchild died on 9/11. And we're just going to give a lot of money out to people. That'll heal the pain. While the whole country is decaying because of the money situation. So what do those people gain from that, really? And what gets me is the ignorance and the stupidity of on their part about not knowing what money is and thinking that somehow that makes all that okay. Murder a million people, pay their relatives money, and forget about the fact you murdered a million people. Until the next time a million people are murdered, or more. You know, it's absolute insanity. It's as insane to believe them as it is to allow them to do what they do and not say anything about it. And we have to do more than say stuff about it, too. You know, this system is designed to just wield to power, and it's all illusion. It's power based on illusion. There's nothing real about it. Yeah. Any comment, Jim? We're about out of time here.
Well, you know, we've reached the situation where it's almost hard to comment. I mean, how far does it have to go before people really understand what's being done to them? That's the question. And of course, the sleight of hand that's involved in all of this is that the bait, if you want to use that word, that is being extended to people of various races who have a liberal mentality. You know, come here, you'll have free medicine, you'll have free education, you'll have free hospitalization, you'll have free this and free that. But actually, everybody knows it's not free. The only source for that kind of money that's being given away is the income of people who insist on keeping their dignity and actually working for a living. And what happens when the percentage of people that are going on these various welfare programs exceeds the number of people who care to do a decent day's work?
They don't really care about that. You see, this adds to the fuel of the chaos that they're trying to create. You know, if they're lying to us, they're lying to the people that are getting a free ride, people that are sneaking over the borders. They talk out of both sides of their face and their rear end at the same time. And all the while asking the metaphorical question, what does that sound like? I mean, they don't say that, but that's what you think. What does that sound like? I'm trying to be graphic without being graphic, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. You know, I was just contemplating the answer, if there is one.
You don't have to answer that. It's their question, you know. Their question. They're rhetorically asking, what does that sound like?
Well, it would be impolite to answer that on the air, because in order to do that, I would have to make use of some rather colorful metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, even if I did that, it would only be my opinion, you know.
Yeah. Would it be the short version or the stretched out version?
I think it would be the old fashioned, straight to the point, Jersey City 4-letter lingo.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I hadn't planned on talking about 9/11 tonight, but, you know, it being the 9th anniversary of that horrible event. And, certainly, we're not making light of the fact of what happened. It was mass murder, and it was orchestrated and carried out by more than just the administration. There were a lot of people ready for what happened that day. Don't you find it strange that all the planes in the country were grounded? All the planes.
Well, the only time that that would be strange, you know, would be if it happened to coincide with the destruction of these two buildings.
Well, it did.
I mean, of course it did. That's my whole point. So, you know, to get the gist of that, what needs to be done is you just go back through the Federal Aviation Commission's records and say, well, when was the last time that phenomenon occurred?
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a heck of a time finding it.
Well, they wanted to minimize the risk of pilots seeing what was and what was not going on. You know, how many planes fly into LaGuardia or Kennedy Airport on the hour? Aren't they backed up for hours? I know O'Hare Airport in Chicago was always backed up. There's just no planes flying anywhere. And no military planes. Save the story that we were told about a plane flying in Pennsylvania. And the images that people saw on TV. But you can't even tell me a Piper Cub hit the Pentagon, because the wings would have been sheared off. That thing would have been smashed to smithereens hitting that building. It would have been like a wet spot on the wall, like somebody squashed a bug. Now, this was supposed to have been a larger plane. It should have left quite a bit of debris outside the Pentagon. There wasn't anything outside there. Everything occurred inside that building. Massive, massive airliner doing that.
Well, don't forget, too, I mean, I thought it was very, very peculiar, and it's just an issue of common sense. A plane that big, carrying a full complement of passengers. What happened to the bodies? What happened to things, you know, normal everyday plane type things, like all the seats, for instance, you know, all the artifacts associated with the plane? A wreckage of that sort would have torn the wings off. Where did they go? Now, on the contrary, what we see is a very small hole, relatively speaking, which favors the entrance of a missile of some sort fired at ground level rather than an airliner. And for some reason, nobody thinks about it. Maybe it's just because they don't want to know. you know, maybe it's easier to play ostrich, stick your head in the sand. But, you know, the problem with playing ostrich is that while your head is in the sand, you can't see that alligator coming to bite you in the rear. And believe me, there's a crop of alligators out there.
Yeah. Even the ostrich has to deal with that reality.
That's right.
You know, we forget about that. We equate it to people. It's definitely an issue. But, you know, we've told people it's time to start getting at the truth, looking for the truth, finding it, knowing it, studying it. And as you discover the truth, you let go of the fear that stops you or paralyzes you from doing anything.
I think it should happen anyway.
Yeah, if the average person were to put themselves in the shoes of one of the families that lost somebody on that day, how would they feel? Would they allow this to happen? Would they allow this to happen at their home or in their neighborhood or in their community? Would they allow that to happen? You know, the way it's looking, many would. You know,
well, you know, when the threat reaches your front door, that's when your attitude starts to change. You know, when it's happening to the neighbor three or four doors down, somehow that doesn't seem close enough to home to be a problem. But in reality, it is, of course.
Yeah. Well, Jim, my mother
was in Rome during the war. During the World War II. And my mom's family was responsible for hiding Jews in their home. And in the middle of the night, they would get a knock on the door, a very vicious, emphatic knocking. And it would be the SS looking for Jewish sympathizers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't open the door, they'd break it down. And if they found even the slightest suspicion of that type of activity, then they would either kill you or pack you off to a concentration camp. Now, does it have to get to that level in this country before people start to realize that all is not well? That's the thing that irks me. How far does it have to go?
Well, they're trying to legislate the whole country into one big concentration camp. You know, on a macroscopic scale. So, in that sense, if you look at what's going on, what else can you call it? It's like one big concentration camp.
Yeah, I see the point. Yeah, the real problem is, will they succeed at this? We're going to let them succeed at this.
Well, I think you know my intentions, and my listening audience knows my intentions, and I'm hoping that they listen because they agree with some part of this. Even the ones carrying this out have to agree that. That it's not going to be as easy as they think. They're the ones acting fearfully, which is why they make these laws in the first place. Why do you have to curb speech of people? You only do that if it's threatening your agenda. What is your agenda? If your agenda is honorable and holistic or sacred, you trust God is going to be behind you. But remember, God is not the destroyer. Satan is. So they show who they worship by their actions. Pretty simple.
For sure.
Well, Jim, we're out of time. Closing comment before we say goodnight?
Well, gee, Don, I don't know. I keep thinking of the analogy of Don Quixote, you know. He saw the imaginary foe in the shape of windmills, but even though the foe wasn't real, he did his best to wipe them out. He used to charge these windmills with his lance, and which caused all kinds of interesting problems. You know, but the point is that that's exactly what we need now, is a whole bunch of Don Quixotes. Because the windmills are really giants, and they're out to do us harm. And I don't think we should wait to see what they've got up their sleeve. You automatically know that it can't be good.
Yeah, it's as though Carlos Castaneda's saw the, or foresaw cap and trade, didn't he? The next thing they're going to push on us is windmill technology as they line up their Ponzi schemes to run through.
Well, I would have a lot to say about that because that's something I know a little bit more about. There's nothing wrong with it except for the fact that it will never be practical for the entire nation. And, you know, it's just another example of false hopes and the
change
of hand that they use in accomplishing their ends.
Yeah. Just another scheme. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for your input on the show tonight, and look forward to seeing you next week on Evident Footprints. Wish you a great weekend and great success with your research and anything that you may have on the laboratory table.
Well, okay. It turns out that's a very appropriate remark, by the way. I appreciate your best wishes, and I hope the day comes when I can talk about the things on the laboratory table. We shall see.
Okay, well, this will always be a place when that time comes for you, so just remember that.
I will indeed.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. I wish you a good night and a great weekend as well.
Same to you, Don.
All right, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and tonight's guest, scientist-inventor Jim Murray. Jim will be back with us again next Friday, so be sure to tune in. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network. Also over at BBS, want to thank both Seth Hendrick and Don Newsom playing tag team on the audio tonight. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Join us again next Monday night when my guest will be Dr. H. Huat. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.